The Raj Quartet by Paul Scott. Episode 6, The Day of the Scorpion, dramatized by John Harvey, with Leah Williams as Sarah Layton and Geraldine James as Mildred Layton.
Just a dream.
I thought it was the baby.
No, the baby's fine. Kicking like billy-o.
Oh, you're soaked through. Let me help you off with that nightie. Don't want you catching a chill.
There's a clean one in the chest of drawers.
All right.
Do you remember something when we were children about a scorpion?
I think so. Here. Put this on.
In my dream, there was this scorpion, and it was encircled by flames. Trapped, and I know it sounds ridiculous, but it was screaming, as if it were in pain, as if it were burning.
There. That's better.
It was in a garden, somewhere I recognized, except it wasn't the same. You know how it is in dreams. Somewhere we used to live.
Carbull Road.
What do you mean?
Carbull Road in Rampur.
It really happened.
They found a small black scorpion in the servants' quarters. We must have been quite small. I can't remember clearly. But somehow, they got it out into the garden and lit a ring of fire around it. I suppose they used paraffin or kerosene.
Oh, and it burned to death.
Someone said they killed themselves with their own sting once they knew they couldn't get out.
Like soldiers falling on their sword?
Yes. And I used to think, how brave, having the courage to do that rather than be burned, once it knew there was no escape.
Yes.
But it isn't true. The part about killing itself. Mm. I asked Aunt Mabel. She told me it only looks like that's what they're doing when they arch their tails. But it's only a reflex action against the heat. That's what they can't stand, you see. The heat. It's what kills them. And what they're doing with their tails, with their sting, is attacking the flames. It's brave, really. Well, braver than taking their own life. And practical. After all, the fire might go out, or be doused by rain. And then it would survive.
To fight another day?
Yes. Never say die.
You'd do that, wouldn't you?
If I were surrounded by a ring of fire.
You know what I mean.
Well, yes. Yes, I suppose I would. I hope so.
I think I'd just lie there and cover my face with my hands.
No, you wouldn't.
I would. I'm not brave like you. I never have been.
That's not true.
Come in. Corporal Layton.
Yes, sir.
Take a seat.
Sir?
Please. I'm afraid I've bad news.
Not my father?
No.
Teddy?
There was a skirmish in the area of Imphal between a forward section of our troops and rebel members of the INA. Captain Bingham was caught in the crossfire. He died instantly. I thought if I informed you first...
Of course, sir.
Your mother... Is she at home, or will she be out shopping?
She and Susan are both at Rose Cottage. I think there's bridge.
Hmm. You'd better go up there and get your mother on her own first, if you can. The transport people will provide you with a car. Your mother may need you at home for a day or two, I shouldn't wonder. I'll have a word with your section commander. It's a terrible thing. Here, drink this. It's Hennessy, 3-star, not country. How is your sister? The baby and everything?
She is well, sir. Thank you.
Who looks after her? Beams or young Travers?
Dr. Travers.
You may want to have him there when Susan is told.
Sarah, how nice.
Hello, Aunt Mabel.
The roses this year really are a picture. Something's wrong.
It's Teddy. He's been killed.
Oh, my dear.
Is Susan here?
She's resting.
She can't see me yet. Is there any way you can get Mother out here without creating a fuss?
Well, I'll try. Oh, dear.
Sarah? Why all the amateur dramatics? Mabel came in with some cock and bull story.
Teddy's
about...
been killed.
I see.
Susan.
She's sleeping. I suppose I'd best ring Dr. Travers in case she takes it badly.
Yes.
You will tell her. It'll be better coming from you.
Don't wake up.
Oh, I must have dropped off.
Yes.
What are you doing here? Is it lunchtime already?
No, I've come back early.
Oh, have you come on badly or something?
No, it's not bad. Oh, come on. Let's help Aunt Mabel with the flowers.
What on earth for?
Oh, you'll get as big as a house if you lie around all day. You ought to take more exercise.
I am as big as a house, and I've done my exercise. What's going on?
Something's happened. I don't know how to tell you, but I've got to. I've got to say it straight.
Whatever is it?
It's about Teddy.
What about him?
The signal came over this morning, and they stopped it being sent here because they knew I was on duty.
Well, what's happened? Has he been injured? What's happened? Tell me.
The signal says... It says Teddy's been killed.
No.
So that's what we have to start believing.
No.
Because there isn't any doubt.
No.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No!
It sounds as if he was on patrol somewhere. I don't know the details.
Stop it! Stop it!
They said it was... Well, they said he wouldn't have felt anything.
No!
Are you all right?
Yes. Thank you.
She didn't mean it, you know. Hitting out like that.
I wasn't hurt.
I was thinking... It's like the messenger in Antony and Cleopatra. Cleopatra always striking him for bringing bad news.
I don't think poor Susan's much like Cleopatra.
Perhaps not. Tell your mother she and Susan can have my room for the night if they'd like. Aziz can rig up extra beds and I can pig in with Barbie.
Well, thanks. But I think I'll try and get them home.
There they are now. How's Susan?
Just sitting there. She won't answer us. She won't lie down. Just sit.
It's not like Susan. It's not like her at all. Poor Mildred can't get through to her, and neither can I. One feels so useless.
Perhaps Dr. Travers will give her something to help her sleep.
He offered her a sedative, but she refused. Just says she wants to go home.
I'm sure that's best.
At the moment, Barbie, though it seems to have eluded you, there is no best.
Is that enough tonic, Mother?
Unless you want a swamp it, yes. Aren't you having one?
I don't think so. I'm getting a bit of a headache.
No wonder.
Here you are.
Oh, that's the ticket. I never cared much for Teddy, you know.
Mother!
So I can't pretend to be exactly bowled over. And for all this shutting herself away in her room, I don't think Susan ever really loved him.
How can you say that?
Well, she was very secretive about the honeymoon, for one thing. At least she was with me. Did she say anything to you?
No. But then I'm sure I wouldn't really expect her to. Mm.
I shouldn't think Teddy was very experienced. Not in that department. That sort of thing can be learned, of course. Practice can make something close to perfect, but not if there's a lack of consideration, too. Yes, that's how he always struck me, the late Teddy Bingham. Inexperienced and inconsiderate in that department.
I think we should try and eat, don't you?
There's cold chicken and salad. Tell Mahmood we'll have ours in here.
Very well.
And have him make up a tray for Susan. She can't not eat. Not with another mouth to feed.
I do not need to speak at length here amongst this congregation of the meaning of the ultimate sacrifice which this gallant officer made in the service of king and country. For you will know, all of you, that the need to serve selflessly has never been more pressing than now. Captain Edward Bingham died not in a foreign land, but on Indian soil, fighting off an enemy who have brought untold misery to the simple peoples of Burma and Malaya, and who would bring it to the whole of India, were we at the 11th hour to fail. But we will not fail. The forces of good will prevail as surely as those of evil will be swept into the sea, leaving India safe from threat, and able to turn again to the ways of peace. Let us pray also that God may grant wisdom to those charged with the future happiness and progress of this great subcontinent, and finally for the peace and blessing of God upon the bereaved.
If I have to read another letter of condolence.
There's one here from the Nawab of Merat. Quite formal. And this from Count Bronowski. Saying the Nawab would be delighted to extend the hospitality of his summer palace in Nanora to Susan and any of the family.
How kind. Quite out of the question.
You know, we still have to write to Aunt Fanny in Calcutta.
Oh, you do that, darling. I simply haven't the strength. Besides, you and Fanny are so close.
Very well. If you'll write to that uncle of Teddy's in Shropshire, the one who promised them a wedding present after the war.
We'll be lucky to see that now. I'll see if I can't organise some curried eggs and rice for lunch. We could eat out on the veranda. I doubt if Susan will want anything, but you might check.
What are you doing?
Nothing. Nothing, really. Just looking at these... the photographs from the wedding.
I wonder if that's such a good idea. I mean, now.
You think I should be trying to forget him already?
No, that's not what I meant. Not at all.
I didn't love him, you know. Teddy. Not really.
Susan. Don't. You don't have
Everybody
to...
Everybody wondered, didn't they? I could see it in their faces. You and Mummy and Aunt Mabel. Everyone. Everyone except Teddy. Well, there's the answer. I didn't. I thought if I could just make a life for myself, the kind of life everyone seemed to expect of me, a life everyone would recognise, then it would be all right. No one would come along and rub me out as if I were a drawing, as if I weren't really there. No one would be able to try.
Oh, Sue.
I thought I'd been in love a score of times. I suppose we all do. Except I knew I wasn't really. Not inside where it's supposed to matter. And that frightened me too. I thought it meant there wasn't anything inside, that there was something wrong with me. I'm not equipped. Something's been left out. And I can remember as clear as day suddenly thinking, why wait? Why wait for something that isn't going to happen? And I thought, well, I've always been good at hiding what I feel. I'll get away with it and no one will know.
Oh.
And there was poor Teddy. He walked straight into it, didn't he? I married him because I quite liked him, because he asked me and because I could. And I thought, oh, and this is horrible to say now. But I thought there wasn't much to him and that would make it easier. But I think that was unfair. I think there was something. And he almost made me feel there might be something in me too, in time. Oh, he had a rotten honeymoon. Rotten.
Oh, Susan. Don't do this to yourself. Not now.
Not because I was scared or because he didn't try, but because I had nothing to give back. That's why he was so pleased when I wrote and told him about the baby. He'd married a girl with nothing to her. Absolutely nothing. But now at least she'd given him something to make up for it. And having it to give him could have made me something, couldn't it?
Shh.
Who do I give the baby to now, Sarah? Tell me.
What do you mean? You don't have to give the baby to anyone.
But I've nothing for it except myself, and that's not enough. That's not enough.
Oh. Oh.
Oh, here. At the service. They prayed for the baby to die.
Oh, Susan.
I thought, how can I face it without Teddy ever coming back? Oh. It's Teddy's baby. I didn't want it. Not for myself. I wanted it for him. To please him. And now...
Oh, Susan. Please.
I can't do it. I just can't do it.
Yes, you can. You can.
Not on my own. Not alone.
You're not alone.
Oh, you just don't understand, do you? You know what I said before? About being afraid someone could just come along and rub me out.
Yes.
I think I've always felt like that. Even when we were children in Ranpur and up here in Pancot. I think it was something to do with Mummy and Daddy always talking about home. When we go home, as if home was where people really lived and here it wasn't really real. I wasn't real. But when I got home, it wasn't any better. It was worse. I wasn't there either.
Susan, come on. That's not true. You know that's not true.
Isn't it? Isn't it true of all of us, one way or another? We were finished years ago, people like us. And we know it, some of us, and pretend not to, and go on as if we thought we still mattered. But we don't. do we? Not anymore.
How is she this morning?
Much the same.
No chance of her joining us for breakfast then, I suppose.
I think she'd prefer to stay indoors.
Life has to go on. She has to recognise that. In her condition, more than most.
What's this?
It came up by a messenger from HQ. For Susan. From Teddy's commanding officer.
You haven't read it?
Not yet.
I think we should look at it before showing it to Susan, don't you?
Go ahead.
Dear Mrs. Bingham, it is my duty, and a very sad one, to offer you on behalf of his divisional commander and fellow officers deep sympathy for the loss you have sustained. Teddy died as a result of wounds having gone forward under heavy fire. With him at the time was Captain Merrick.
Merrick?
Who, despite being wounded himself and at risk to his own life, rendered the utmost assistance to your husband and stayed with him until the arrival of medical aid.
All that trouble at the wedding when he was best man. There was more to that than meets the eye.
Says he's been evacuated to a base hospital. He's obviously quite badly hurt. He's being recommended for a medal. You didn't like him, did you, Captain Merrick?
No breeding. No class. Too full of himself by half. Pushy. The way his sort often are.
I don't think we should show this to Susan just yet. Do you?
I wouldn't show it to her at all. Not unless you want to risk setting her off again. Why don't you wait until this evening and then just give her the gist, as much as you think she can stand?
It's funny, isn't it? I was thinking about him just the other day.
Captain Merrick?
Yes. How pleased Teddy was when he agreed to be best man. Proud, almost. I was looking for a picture of him at the wedding, and you know, it's strange, but out of all those photographs, there's only one. Here, let me show you. There's only this one. Look, outside the Gymkhana Club. We're just leaving for the train.
I can't see him.
There, behind Aunt Fenny and Uncle Arthur. You see? With his face half turned away, as if he didn't want his picture taken at all.
That wasn't the way he struck me. Quite the opposite, I would have said. Hmm? Self-aware. Certainly not diffident or shy. The kind of man who, if he's in a room, very much wants you to know he's there.
We should write to him, shouldn't we? And thank him. It's the right thing, isn't it?
Yes. I suppose it is.
Or even better, go and see him.
In Calcutta?
Well, why not? You could stay with Aunt Fenny.
If you feel that strongly about it, why not ask Aunt Fenny to go and see him? From the family?
No, she didn't like him, and I don't think he liked her. He didn't like me either, no matter how polite he was at the wedding. But he liked you.
I don't know if that's true.
I don't like to think of him lying there in hospital, perhaps feeling guilty.
Guilty?
Thinking, you know, he might have been bad luck for Teddy. Will you do it, Sarah? Please. For me.
Of course he was in love with her. Captain Merrick with the Manners girl.
Is that true?
Oh, yes. Well, at least it's what people say. And I believe it. It makes sense, you see. He was in love with her. But she preferred the Indian, this Harry Kumar. Well, she defended him. Oh, no, not that I'm saying he was guilty, I don't mean that. But she refused to give evidence against Kumar. Or any of the others Merrick had arrested, and of course the case collapsed. No one was ever tried. And it ruined Merrick's career.
You think so?
Well, why else would he be sent to a backwater such as Sundanagar?
Poor man.
I feel sorry for all of them. The girl, for instance, the girl especially. I wonder if she was still alive. Would she regret it now? I wonder if she did before she died. But one should not speak ill of the dead. and I do not, as a Christian, feel as strongly as some do about the child. They're all God's children, after all. Even though this one has, I believe, a heathen name.
Poverty.
Indeed.
How's Aunt Mabel?
Oh, you know, little more forgetful. She falls asleep with her spectacles on reading. One's so afraid of danger, you know, breakage, a splinter in the eye. I go in and remove them, put out the light.
You look after her.
Oh, she doesn't know. But you see, I owe her for letting me stay here. I am so grateful. And I'm a light sleeper myself. The slightest sound wakes me. Oh, of course, in the old days, in remote parts, one felt vigilance laid on one almost by God as a duty. And it's become a habit.
I'm pleased, Barbie, that she has you.
Now, tell me what you've really come for.
I explained in my letter to see Captain Merrick and thank him for what he did for Teddy.
All this way? In all that heat and dirt on that nasty little train? I could have done that for you and saved you the trouble and expense.
They gave me a rail warrant, and it's no great trouble, really.
Do I detect six of one and half a dozen of the other?
What do you mean?
He took a bit of a shine to you in Murat, Captain Merrick. We could all see that.
I don't think that's true, Fenny.
I was simply wondering if it was mutual.
I don't think he took a shine to me at all. The only reason I've come is because it seemed important to Susan, and I'd like to get it over with as soon as possible. I've booked a sleeper back from Ranpur to Pangkot for tomorrow night.
Very well. I'll ask your uncle to pull some rank about visiting. He'll enjoy that.
Miss Layton, I'm Sister Pryor. We had a message from your uncle, Colonel Grace.
I hope I'm not putting you out, upsetting regular visiting hours.
That's all right. Only I didn't quite get the relationship. You are a relative, aren't you?
No. Captain Merrick was best man at my sister's wedding.
I see. I'd always understood there were no relatives, not even back home. Ronald is rather a special case with us. He's been wonderfully brave, but though he'd never say so, terribly lonely. Come this way.
Thank you. Hello, Ronald.
Sir.
I've brought you some fruit and cigarettes. I hope that's all right. I remembered you smoked.
Thank you.
I'll put these on here.
How's your sister?
Sue's fine. She sends her love. And Mother, of course. And Aunt Fenny. She and Uncle Arthur are in Calcutta now. Uncle Arthur spends his time lecturing young officers fresh out from home about India. Aunt Fenny asked me to be sure to find out if there was anything you need.
Well, that's kind. It's good of you to come all this way. Are you staying in Calcutta long?
No. I go back tomorrow.
That's a shame.
I could come and see you in the morning before I leave.
I'm afraid not. They've got other plans for me tomorrow. Some kind of surgery. Do smoke if you like. There are some in the drawer.
Can I light one for you?
It involves a bit more than that, I'm afraid. A sort of, sharing. I can't hold anything yet.
That's all right.
Thank you. Your hands smell much nicer than Sister Pryor's.
This surgery tomorrow. Do you want to talk about it? what they're doing?
Not really. They'll poke about and come up with something. Tell me about it afterwards.
If I rang before I caught my train, do you think they'd tell me how it went?
Yes, I'm sure they would.
Here.
I expect there are things you want to know about what happened.
When you replied to my letter, it was as if there was something you couldn't quite bring yourself to say. Something you wanted to get off your chest.
As if I had a confession to make.
Have you, Ronald?
I keep asking myself, whatever fault it may have been of his, would it have happened if I hadn't been with him? And I have to answer no, it wouldn't. It was the stone all over again, the stone at the wedding, only this time it wasn't a stone and it wasn't thrown at me. But the effect was the same.
You're imagining it. You ought to forget it and concentrate on getting better.
No, one doesn't get better by not facing things. Besides, I liked him, Teddy. I may have envied him, too.
Why envied?
He had all the attributes, didn't he? For the game.
The game? I don't think I understand.
Well, he really believed it, you see. Fair play. The rules. Play up, and play the game. It was what got him killed. You know about the GIFs? Indian soldiers who were taken prisoner by the Japanese and persuaded to fight against the British. Teddy couldn't understand how men could turn coat like that and fight the very officers who trained them. You see, Teddy loved his men and he expected his men to love him.
You think that's wrong?
I think it's weak. It's a confusion. It dilutes the purity of an act, blinds you to the truth. It's amateur as opposed to professional.
And you're professional?
I try to be. I do try for a certain professional detachment.
It's funny.
What?
I should have said you were quite an emotional person underneath. And that it sometimes runs you into trouble.
Well, you're right, of course. I suppose I have run into trouble, as you put it, in my time.
You were telling me about Teddy.
We were advancing against the Japanese. There was an Indian battalion on our left, and there was some danger we might be cut off. So the general decided to push ahead to the brigade headquarters, liaise with the brigadier. We set off in two jeeps. The general and I were in one with a driver, and Teddy was in the other. It was a lovely morning. Bright and crisp. Have you ever been in Manipur?
No.
On the plain itself, around Imphal, it's like northern India up on the northwest frontier. Much the same hills and mountains. But we were just south of there, in the foothills. The road was pretty rough. Steep wooden banks on one side and long drops on the other. When we got to HQ, we found out they'd just taken this fellow, Mohammed Baksh, prisoner. He was a GIF. Officers like Teddy took that kind of thing really to heart. They couldn't believe soldiers who'd eaten the king's salt could be suborned in that way. I started questioning him, but he was a mess.
Name. Come on, name.
Baksh. Sahab Mohammed Baksh.
Age? Huh? Regiment? Which village are you from? Tell me that. How long is it since you've been home? Home? How long?
For heaven's sake, Merrick.
What's the matter? What's wrong?
Can't you see you're terrifying him?
What do you expect me to do? Hold his hand.
The fellow knelt down and rested his head on Teddy's boots. And I think that moved Teddy deeply. He felt real compassion for him.
And you? Did you feel that too?
No. To me, he was merely a source of information. I had no feelings about the man himself. He'd made a choice, and it hadn't worked well. It happens all the time. You choose, you act, you pay or get paid. Do you disapprove?
No. I can't, can I? It's true, after all. You pay or get paid.
Anyway, Teddy pulled him to his feet quite gently, and from the look on Batch's face, it was as if he felt he belonged again. Well, at least, that was what Teddy believed. And at least now he'd calmed down, he could answer questions.
Come on, man. Get up. On your feet.
The unit you were with, how well armed are they?
Rifles. We are only armed with rifles.
Nothing more? Come on, mortars, machine guns. How about machine guns?
Two machine guns, sir, but ammunition very low.
And mortars? Don't tell me you haven't any mortars.
Only one.
One?
I swear on my father's honor, only one.
How come you were found wandering off on your own, away from the rest of the unit?
I was sent with two others to keep watch on the track leading down to the valley. But we became lost in the trees, and then when it was dark, we decided to stay where we were and wait for the light. One of us would sleep while the others kept watch. But when I awoke, the others had gone. They had taken the rest of the food. I fell asleep again, and when I woke, two British soldiers were standing over me with rifles.
Oh, stop that infernal caterwauling and tell me about the Japanese. How far back up the valley are they, huh? Any more strength?
For heaven's sake, leave the poor devil alone. Bax, come on. You're still a soldier. Act like one. Hmm? Now, you've done wrong. Very wrong. But remember, you can depend on me to help you. Always.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Now, these are the two men who were with you. Were they in your regiment?
Yes, sir. The same regiment.
And you were captured together by the Japanese and then forced to fight?
Yes, sir.
What are their names?
Aziz Khan and Farika Khan.
Are they still, do you think, in the woods?
Yes, I think so. I do not think they would go back to the Japanese.
Now, if they could, do you think they would give themselves up?
Yes, sir. Yes. Oh, yes.
Very well. Come with me.
But you can't.
Damn it, Teddy. Have you taken leave of your senses?
Oh, I promise. Come on. In you get that. Go.
Teddy pushed Mohammed Bash into the back of his jeep with the driver and climbed behind the wheel himself. For a minute, I was all for letting him get on with it, but then I realized that wouldn't wash. So I set off after him. When we got to the first bend, I could see Teddy's jeep about half a mile ahead. It stopped, and I saw Teddy stand up in his seat and start calling out. Calling these men's names.
Aziz! Aziz Khan! Farika Khan!
It was as if Teddy himself had given a signal. There was a single rifle shot, and I saw Teddy duck, or appear to duck. And then a second or two later, there was a mortar explosion in the woods to our left, and then another close to Teddy's jeep. There was more firing, and I saw Teddy's driver pitch over, and then Baksh jumping clear and running towards the wood.
Teddy!
I ran down the track as far as the first mortar crater and then moved into the cover of the trees. There was more shelling, and by the time I got to Teddy's jeep, it was on fire. The driver had been flung clear by the explosion, and Teddy himself had been thrown to one side. I was on my way to get him when the petrol cans exploded. I didn't remember too much after that, to be honest. Just hunching forward, protecting my face as best I could, while I caught hold of Teddy and dragged him clear. I thought at first he was dead, but I'm afraid he wasn't. Not then.
But he was unconscious.
Not all the time.
We were told Teddy was unconscious and hadn't suffered.
Let Susan go on thinking that. It's a terrible thing, burning. I was glad when they told me later he had a bullet lodged in his back. At the time, I thought he was only dying from burns. Sitting with him, waiting, I was reminded of one of the last things I had to deal with in Mayapur. There was a mission school superintendent who committed suicide. Suti, as a matter of fact, even though she was English.
You mean Miss Crane?
You knew her?
Not directly. But Miss Batchelor, the woman who lives with my aunt, knew her well. She talks about her often.
She and an Indian teacher had been attacked on their way back from Dipripur. A mob beat her up and murdered the teacher, set fire to their car. And when she was found, she was sitting at the side of the road, holding the dead Indian's hand.
Poor woman.
I don't think she ever recovered. Before she killed herself, she dressed herself in Indian clothes, built a sort of funeral pyre in a shed in her garden and locked herself in. I had to go along, poke about, question her old servant. There wasn't much to find. I did turn up an old picture in a chest. Queen Victoria receiving tribute, sitting on a throne under a cloud with angels and all sorts gathered round her like children. Manbap. That's what they call it, isn't it? I am your father and mother. Not anymore.
What you did for Teddy. You were very brave.
I did my job, nothing more.
Ronald, that's not true. Don't put yourself down.
Look, the truth is, I didn't go to save Teddy. I went to get Mohammed Baksh. I want you to accept that, and the fact that when it came to it, I didn't have the courage to go looking for him.
But you pulled Teddy out. You rescued him.
I pulled him out because I was afraid of what people would say if I left him to fry. So you see, that's the way it was.
No.
What do you mean?
I mean I don't believe you.
No?
You went down there without thinking why you went, Ronald. You saw they were in trouble and needed help. What you call the game only looks like a game to people who aren't in the team. And even if it's only as 12th man, you are a member of the team, after all.
And you are very much the Colonel's daughter.
I was born that way, I'm afraid. Ronald, I really should go.
Of course.
Oh, before I do, Susan asked me to ask if you'd be one of the godfathers for her and Teddy's child.
How very kind. But in all the circumstances, it wouldn't be suitable, would it? You will tell her I was touched and very grateful all the same.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Ronald. I'm sorry, sister, but if you don't mind me asking...
Yes, Miss Layton?
It's just that Ronald... Well, he didn't want to say too much about exactly what was wrong with him.
Third-degree burns and bullet wounds in both arms. They removed the left hand in Camilla before he was transferred here. Tomorrow we have to take off the arm from just above the elbow. The right arm's a mess too, but we can save that.
And his face?
His face will be scarred for life, of course. But his hair will grow again. He might even look quite human without the bandages. There's your lift.
You bitch. You bloody, bloody bitch.
Sarah?
Yes, it's me.
The news is we've gone in and established a beachhead in Normandy. Your mother will be bucked. I'll lay odds on your father being home sooner than we thought.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Let's drink to it being true. What I said earlier about you maybe being stuck on Ronald Merrick...
But I'm not. Really. Frankly, the idea appalls me.
I thought you might have been trying to hide your feelings because of what the rest of us might say.
Am I really so unattractive, Auntie? A board school boy with a brain and a gentlemanly veneer and only one arm. Couldn't I do better than that?
Yes, and I'm sure you will.
Will I?
Oh, yes. And when you do, when you're really in love, well, there's one thing that's absolutely certain. You'll know.
Did you know, Aunt Fanny, when you were in love?
Several times I thought I did. And once I knew.
You were lucky, then.
No, Pet, not really. You see, it wasn't Arthur.
I'm sorry.
Oh, you must never be sorry. Never. Just remember, 99% of life is compromise. It's part of the contract. And I've had a good life. I've been happy. I won't say content. Contentment's a different thing. But happy, yes, most of the time.
I'm pleased.
Then I'll tell you a secret. I adored your father.
My father?
Adored him. And not from afar. But he only had eyes for your mother. So that was that. She's never told you.
Mother? No, never.
I'm not surprised, I suppose. Families are funny things. Now, drink up. I'll run you a bath, and then you must make yourself presentable. Some of Arthur's young men will be dropping by on their way into town. Once they see you, I expect they'll want to take you with them.
Oh, Auntie, I don't know.
Oh, nonsense. The thing is, just fall in with whatever they decide. Men much prefer the helpless, happy type. My bet is they'll plump for the Grand Hotel. It's an officer's hostel these days, and they feel at home there. And, Pet, remember, there's safety in numbers. Listen to me. Birds and bees. I shan't start worrying about you until long after midnight. Jimmy Clark will look after you. He's the best of the bunch. Now, let's powder our noses and then once more into the breach.
Legs after all.
Well, have you boys decided how you'll finish up this evening? There's Ingrid Bergman and Gary Cooper at the New Empire.
Send not to ask for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee.
Oh, I've seen it. It's rotten.
Yeah, and likely to be packed out all the same.
Arthur and I are going to the Purvises, and I thought you people might make up a party of your own. Perhaps show my niece Sarah a little of Calcutta. Mm-hmm. Jimmy, you'll take care of her, won't you?
It will be my pleasure, Sarah.
We'll be ready in a few minutes. Arthur will be pleased to give some of you a ride into town. As many as we can squeeze in.
We'll have a job squeezing in Harry.
Be sure to tell me the moment you've had enough. It can get pretty racked in here. It may not be quite up your street.
Well, I don't know. Why not?
Well, I should say rather it's not much up mine.
Oh. Aunt Fenny tells me you were at Chillingborough.
And for my sins?
It's Daddy's old school.
Oh, I hope he survived the experience.
Yes, I think so.
Good. I survived it too. Come on. I only ever dance when there's still a bit of room and other people can see. So now's your chance. Let's take those two seats over there and leave the others to their own ends. Cigarette?
Thanks. I will.
Good. Now, as I understand it, you're catching a train at lunchtime tomorrow back into the bosom of your family?
Yes.
Now, before you go, I'll show you something of the real Calcutta. Don't worry. I've promised your Aunt Fanny I'll have you home safely.
Where are we?
Wait and see. Just follow me. This place belongs to an Indian woman named Mira. While the music's on, we just creep in and sit like mice. Oh, we're in luck. There's a divan. Wait here and I'll get us something to drink. Here. Brandy, 3-star. I hope I didn't overdo the soda. That's Piari on sitar. Just about the best there is.
Movement control telephoned. The plane leaves for Colombo half an hour earlier than they originally told you.
Oh, thanks, Mira. You see, I brought someone along to hear Piari. Her name's Sarah.
Hello. You are welcome here. Piari's in good form tonight. They've asked him to play at Government House. Did you hear?
No. Will he go?
Well, what do you think? He said he might send one of his pupils because at Government House they wouldn't know the difference. But none of his pupils wanted to go either, even as a joke. Not unless they let him hide a bomb in the cigar. And Piari said, all very well, but why ruin a perfectly good instrument? So that was that. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you.
Perhaps later I will get the chance to show you around.
That would be nice.
She's a stunner, isn't she?
Yes. Beautiful.
Cigarette?
No, thanks.
She keeps her husband in drink and pays all his gambling debts and hotel bills and his mistress's clothes and jewellery accounts.
Why would she do that?
Why not? She's so rich he can't count it. Anyway, she likes his mistress. They used to be lovers themselves.
How do you know her?
Oh, Mira has friends in Cairo. They wrote to her when they knew I was coming to India.
Oh, I see. And has Mira friends in Ceylon, too?
We both have.
Then you'll be nice and comfortable once the war is over.
It's one of my aims in life. Isn't it yours?
I suppose I've never given it much thought.
No, I don't suppose you have.
Unlike you.
Look, give the war another year. The one in Europe, anyway. The one with Japan, a year more than that. There'll be a general election in England, and the common soldier and the factory worker will throw the Tories out. And once the socialists get in, well, lopping off India's an article of faith with them. And when they see that keeping it won't pay, they'll lop it off double quick. Let's face it, the whole empire's a time-expired sore, a suppurating mess. Do I shock you?
No. Do you want to?
Maybe. A little. You're very tense.
Am I?
Oh, here. All across the top of your shoulders. At your neck. How's that? Better?
Better.
You're quite a girl, Sarah Layton.
No, I'm not quite a girl. I'm this one.
How do you like that? The music?
I liked it very much.
There'll be more later. Lakshmi Kripalani, a singer. In the meantime, why don't you let me show you where you can freshen up?
Yes. Thank you.
There. There's probably everything you want in here. If not, just ring and one of the girls will come.
Thank you.
Don't say you weren't expecting me.
Of course not.
I thought you understood.
I understood nothing of the sort.
Mira certainly did. You shan't be expected back for some little time. There. Now we won't be disturbed.
Unlock that door now. I insist.
Do you? Do you really? I promised your Aunt Fenny I'd look after you, you know.
And you think this is what she meant?
Yes, I do. Don't you? If she were 5 years younger and I were 5 years older, I'd screw her too.
You're trying to shock me again, aren't you?
Oh, I don't think you're so easily shocked. Not really. You've been through this 100 times up here, just not down here. You're still a virgin, aren't you?
Yes.
Well, you're tough, Sarah Layton, and you've got a brain. But you don't know much about joy, do you?
No.
Well, all the brains and toughness in the world aren't worth peanuts if you lack joy.
Mm.
You're hurting.
Well, sometimes a little pain. Let me undress you, see what we've got. Let's start here with the shoes. That's it, that's it. The right one first. The lift is off. And there. And now for the left. Set your shoes down there beside the bed. How perfect they look together, side by side. And I can slide my hand beneath the arch of your foot. And move on up and round and up again.
In The Day of the Scorpion, Episode 6 of The Raj Quartet by Paul Scott, Sarah Layton was played by Leah Williams, Mildred Layton by Geraldine James, Susan Layton by Alex Tregear, Teddy Bingham by Nicholas Bolton, Ronald Merrick by Mark Baisley, Fenny Grace by Selena Griffiths, Barbie Batchelor by Marsha Warren, and Mabel Layton by Margaret Tysack. Hugh Dixon played General Rankin, Giles Fagan Clark, Priyanga Elan, Mira, and Ian Masters, Reverend Peplow. Other parts were played by Jason Chan, Sheev Graywal, Robert Hasty, and Emily Wachter. Music was by Raymond Mirza. The Day of the Scorpion was dramatized by John Harvey, and the director was Jeremy Mortimer.
And tomorrow, as the war nears an end, can Mabel Layton's companion, Barbie Batchelor, cope with some shattering events?
The return of Radio 4's epic drama set exactly 100 years ago to the day. Home Front.
Come on, Isabel, chin up. None of us knows what's around the next corner.
Well, we do. Sandgate.
I meant I know you're at a loose end. It's only to be expected now that Christine has been reunited with her aunt and uncle.
I'm happy for her. I am.
Good morning, Mrs. Graham. Isabel?
Alec, fancy seeing you here.
Reverend Hamilton and I take Holy Communion here every week for the soldiers in the rest camps.
Congratulations, Mr. Poole, on your engagement.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm sure having a nurse as a spouse will come in useful.
Yes. Thank you, Isabel. Are you here for an interview?
No. What interview?
The Women's Army Auxiliary Corps are looking to recruit women with skills.
Oh, Isabel. Might be just what you need. Or rather, you might be just what they need.
Do you think so?
I don't expect they have many other interviewees who have got your experience. Driving an ambulance in France.
No, I suppose not.
Oh, go on, darling, give it a go. What's the worst that can happen?
Well, I suppose it's worth investigating.
That's the spirit. I'll bid you both good day, then.
Aren't you going to wish me luck?
Good luck.
Goodbye. Isabel.
What?
You know full well what. Reverend Poole is engaged to be married. Now go on. Go and see if they'll give you an interview.